Coming up next is the Professor James McCanney Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening, December 21st, shortest day of the year, 2006. Actually, the shortest day for most of us will be early morning on December 22nd. It actually occurs at 6:08 a.m. December 22nd, that's universal time, so subtract off from that the number of hours you are from Greenwich, England, and that would be your local time. But at any rate, that turns out to be early in the morning, generally in the United States. So on the 22nd. So happy shortest day of the year. And we're turning the corner. First day of winter. I always thought that the first day of winter should be actually a month and a half before the shortest day. Then the first day of spring would be a month and a half after the shortest day. Then the middle of winter would be on the shortest day of the year. That would seem to me to be the natural progression here. But at any rate, who am I? Nobody listens to me. On to the first topics. I am announcing my next book. And this has leaked out. Like, for example, I was on Coast to Coast about a week ago talking about the solar flaring, giving commentary. And so host George Norrie asked me what I was doing lately, and I, at the time, said a few things, plus my new book is coming out very shortly. So in an effort to get this out to the public, I will be posting a special order link regarding the book. Now, I never pre-announce titles or topics, and there's a very good reason for that, because of the amount of the number of people running around trying to quick get in on a good thing. And there's some logistics in releasing this next book. So I won't talk about what the topic is about. But as always, I think it's going to, I know it will go in a brand new direction, as all of my books have done. People always, I remember when my second book came out, people thought, oh, he's just writing another Planet X book. Well, it turned out to be very much not another Planet X book. It was the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book. And the third book, the Weather book, takes on another very different direction. The book that's coming up now is going to be about 100 pages long. Let's put it that way. So it's a little shorter than the Atlantis to Tesla book. The Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes book, I believe, is about 190 pages. The Weather book is around 300 pages, and the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet is 60 pages. So this will be the same format as the other books, the Weather book, the Atlantis to Tesla, and the Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes book, same size and format, but about 100 pages long, so just a little shorter than the Atlantis to Tesla book, but very packed with some very interesting information. So that's all I'm going to say, but I will be pre-selling this prior to publication. And the way I decided to package it is that digging around in the archives, we found one box of the first printing of the Weather book. Now, the Weather book is going into its third printing right now, in fact. And the first printing sold out, as most of my books did, sold out overnight. And so there's only 56, we found a box of 56 of the original first printing copies of the Weather book. So what I'm going to do is have a special offer. The first 56 people to order the new book. The new book, by the way, will run around, I think it's going to be around $12 in that price range. So pretty good price for a 100-page book with some very unique information in it. But the package that I want to do, and this is for people who are supporters out there, people that have followed my work, etc., this is another way to support me in getting this new book out, to give it a little charge right from the beginning. Here's what I am offering. The weather book, now this is the first printing of the weather book, and plus the new book, which I'm not giving you the title or the topic yet. And those two will be a $55 package, but I'm signing them. It'll be a signed edition of both of those books. So it'll be the first printing, sold-out edition, of which we only have 56 left, and then the new book when it's released, and these will be shipped when the new book is released and within the next number of weeks. And I don't have an exact date yet. So anyway, if you want to support this new book coming out and get something possibly rather unique, a signed copy of each one of them will be signed by myself, an autographed version, then look on my homepage and you will see there the offer. So thank you very much. And also just a big, big holiday Christmas thank you to all of my listeners. It's really, it's very difficult sometimes to do all of the things I do, but what makes it very easy is the audience out there. This is the biggest classroom I've ever had. I'm on many radio shows as guest, some of the largest radio shows in the world, and it's just a great pleasure for me to do this work, knowing that there are so many people out there that are benefiting, and that's what keeps me going. At any rate, on to the next topic. Tonight is the third show in the series, Ultimate Survival. And you will want to get a paper and a pencil tonight, because you, I believe you will want to write some things down. And of course, all of these shows are archived both on my page and on the network page, so you can get at this information and listen to it again. Just a quick announcement. The show last week, the second show, the 14th, a number of things happened. If you dialed into the shortwave version of the show, there was somebody else talking on my time slot at WWCR, and it was just a mistake that they made in engineering there, and they apologized. But we did get my show on, and it did air in its entirety. However, there was another problem that night, and that was the solar storm. So there were a lot of people who actually could not listen on shortwave due to the severe solar storm activity going on. So as a result, and due to the very high level of importance of that show, I will be replaying it in its entirety next week, the 28th of December. And even if you did catch that show and listen to it, I would recommend that you listen to it twice. And the feedback I've gotten from people is that that is an extremely important show. And that feedback is not just from the average guy on the street, although I did get that feedback too, that it was an important show. But I got the feedback from people who are true, experienced, professional survivalists. These are people that are Navy SEALs. These are people who are trained in survival, and they listen to that. And the one thing you have to understand about survival is it's not just enough to buy something and have it sitting on the shelf in case of an emergency. You have to use this stuff every day, and you have to live survival. You can't just go out one day and say, well, darn, now I got to survive. What am I going to do? And there's some very important rules of survival. We saw, for example, anyway, back to the point, next week I will be replaying, with a new heading on it, of course, but I'll be replaying the show from the 14th on the 28th of December in its entirety, and you should listen to that show at least two times. But the main point of that show was you have to be mentally prepared for a survival trek, and I want to give an example here. Take an example of an automobile where you have a transmission. Now, if your transmission and motor are not balanced, the motor is what provides the energy, you are the control of the car, and the transmission is what takes that energy and puts it to the wheel to make the car go. Now, if there's a transmission, I want to explain. There's some good and bad designs of transmissions, but I want to explain a transmission that was designed by the Jeep Corporation. And it was designed and used back in the early 90s. So if you have a Jeep, any of the Jeep's automatic transmission that was built back in the early 90s, you have this transmission. And most of the engines of that era last and last and last. And it's a very interesting concept where instead of a clutch, you have two steel plates and they come together and they move apart. And based on the amount of energy you need. So you might be going up a hill, and all of a sudden the engine RPMs increase, these plates move apart just a little bit, and so your RPMs increase, so you're driving more power to the transmission to drive the four wheels. It's a four-wheel drive system, one of the first all-wheel drive systems in existence. It was so efficient and so easy on the engine. In other words, say you're going up a hill and you need more power. If the transmission were locked tightly to the engine and the wheels, like most cars, then your engine develops a lot more power and it puts a lot more pressure on the pistons, therefore wears out your engine faster. So this Jeep transmission allows the engine to actually rev up to higher RPMs and deliver more power to the transmission when it needs it. And then if you're going down a hill, the opposite happens. That transmission will lock in, and your engine RPMs will drop way down below what it normally would need if it were locked tightly to the transmission between the transmission and engine. The reason I'm giving this example is humans are very much the same. Let me use the Jeep example once more. You're in control of this car. If you're doing a lot of fast starts and a lot of fast stops, your car isn't going to last as long. You're going to wear out the brakes. You're going to wear out the engine. You're going to wear out the parts in the car a lot faster with a lot of high-tension driving. Let's put it that way. So now if you take that same example and translate it to a human being or a group of human beings that are in a survival mode, if you are not tuned, your engine, your driving force, is not tuned to the transmission, which is making your body move and do things, you're going to wear yourself out in a big hurry. And if your mental state is in anguish and severely stressed, and this would be the case if you're not experienced in doing the things, just like filtering water. Say you have to filter water, and you've never used your water filter before. And you all of a sudden, well, what do I do? Where do I put these? And you're fumbling around and you're thirsty and you need water. Somebody has a cut and you need some clean water. And you're trying to read the directions and the directions are wet and they're falling apart and you're falling apart. You're a big mess because you have not taken the time to use your survival equipment. Now, the case here carries over to survival, the same situation with the Jeep transmission. The good transmission in a human being would be one that's tuned, it already knows what to do, it's experienced in using its equipment, and you, when you're in a survival mode, you're always going to be more tense. But the people who really, truly understand survival and what it really means, it isn't going out and buying an extra can of tuna and just having it on a shelf. It's not having a bank in the basement full of MREs of ready-to-eat food or canned goods. That's being prepared in one way. That's the physical sense. But are you mentally prepared to face a challenge that is out of the norm, where you have to take care of yourself and you've got other people around you? And this is where other people around you may go bananas. Have a problem, and you really have to be in control of yourself. All of the people around you have to be in control of themselves, or you're going to have a problem, especially in a survival situation. This is extremely important. So mental stability, spiritual stability, the ability to understand that you can take care of yourself, knowing that the government truck, there's not going to be a big semi that pulls up in front of your house and starts unloading food and fresh water and canned goods and a turkey dinner. That is not going to happen. You're going to be down to the very basics of living, and that's it. What you have is what you have. Now, the biggest problem, the number one, numero uno, biggest problem that people have in a survival situation is they were not prepared, and they were not prepared, and someone had to leave to go get something. And now let's take the climbers, and this is a tragic event, of course, on Mount Hood this past week. But a lot of people who are experts said that the three people should never have split up. And eventually they all ended up on their own, each one of them unable to actually take care of themselves. Together in a snow cave, they may have been able to combine like the warmth, body warmth, etc. And this is something that I understand Indians, Native Americans, and other people around the world had to do in times when there were no facilities, when they were in a true survival situation, and they lived daily in a survival situation, you know, in history a long time ago. In the cold weather, they had to get together as a group physically and literally cover themselves, and the collective body heat of all the people actually had to keep them warm. Now, you can imagine that in those times, they were down to the very basic survival skills, the things that would allow the majority of them to survive. So, at any rate, I will talk a little bit more about buckets number one. I talked about the first week, and then I said there are bucket number two, and these are either packs or a bucket with a lid on it or something that you can carry certain supplies with. And I said that bucket number one contained basically a water filter, a gravity feed water filter. And as I said, the Berkey is the one you want with you, and you do want extra filters. Do not buy one without extra filters. And that's why when I offer it on my webpage, I offer it with extra filters. You will need those. Anybody who sells you one without extra filters is not doing you a favor. It would be like selling you an automobile without a spare tire. You need those. And you need them for a larger water capacity in case you have more people there, or all of a sudden a greater need for water, such as an injury. And also you need to keep two of them as spares. So you need, my personal opinion, you need a Berkey with four filters. And remember that you can pour in, you want to pre-filter your water. If there's mud, if there's particulate matter in the water, if there is radiation from a radiation hazard, you can take a few feet of dirt, take a bucket, put some dirt in it, punch some holes in the bottom, this is how you would actually do this. You would take a bucket, punch some holes in the bottom of the bucket, take a piece of cloth, lay it in there, put dirt in the bucket, and then pour water through that. You could either use sand or dirt. And then the water that comes out of that, you would put into your Berkey to filter that further down to pure drinking water. So you would pre-filter your water. And the reason for doing that is the dirt would absorb a lot of the bad stuff, and especially if there's radiation involved. The dirt would absorb that before you get it into your water filter like the Berkey. So at any rate, then the other thing I said with a survival bucket number one was 25 pounds of red winter wheat, preferably organic. You want it to be organic because you may have to grow this as your only source of food. A lot of hybrid wheats will not grow again. They won't grow very well, if at all. So you need a good organic, and there are sources of these on the internet. I don't sell that myself. But I would say 25 pounds per person. Each person could carry his own 25 pounds or 20 pounds for little kids of the winter wheat and a couple sprouting trays, and you would be able to survive where many other people would not be able to. The other thing you would want to carry with you is a knife. And you would also, this is something that I feel in this modern day we can get. They're very available. They're called space blankets and space. They're basically a space suit made out of space blanket material. And it minimally to have space blankets where you can cover yourself and keep warm. They weigh so little you could carry 10 of them and you wouldn't even notice the weight. But they fold out into a large blanket and it would keep you warm. Now if the campers, the hikers on Mount Hood last week had one of those, they would have all survived. They could have stayed together, stayed warm, and waited for rescue. The other thing, just an insert on the hikers, after all the years of people becoming lost on mountainside and in this modern day of technology, GPS locators and beepers, why doesn't the mountain climbing industry require that these people carry a little locator that you just turn on and that thing will beep for weeks at a time? They have them on life rafts, they're used for boats, and they would not weigh hardly anything at all. Each person could carry one, and as soon as you know you're in trouble, you turn that thing on and you get into a snow cave. A helicopter, a single helicopter could have gone up and dropped a load of supplies to last them a week or 10 days until the storm cleared and they could actually get help up there. Instead of that, you have teams of people risking their lives in extreme conditions. I was told over $1 million worth of fuel was burnt in trying to fly around and locate these guys when all they needed was a little beeper. It reminds me of NASA with the 14 astronauts now that have been killed in the space shuttle. All they needed was a parachute and a system to break the command module out of the shuttle and bring it back safely to Earth. Technology that was included in the Apollo program, and for some reason, because of cost considerations, they didn't include it in the space shuttle program. Not going to get into that tonight. But when you're talking about survival, many times it's the very simple things, the little things that make the entire difference. That's what I'm saying. So I would go out, if I were you, and buy enough space blankets or related suits. Another thing that's good to have is a roll of aluminum foil, the big industrial kind. You can put together a blanket, and it's very effective for keeping you warm. There's a new product on the market. It's a bubble wrap, just like packaging bubble wrap, and it has a layer of aluminum foil on each side of it, glued to it. It's a very good insulator, and it comes in big rolls. People use it. It originally was used in the greenhouse industry, and they realized that people around their homes could use this for many applications also. And you could literally build a small tent or insulate a small tent or a small snow cave or a small cave or a small building with this material. Just a roll of it would be priceless. And a lot of times, remember that every person generates about the equivalent of a 100-watt light bulb of heat. That's why if you have a room full of people in the wintertime, a lot of times in a gathering area, they actually have to turn off the heat because each person is contributing the amount of heat equivalent to a 100-watt light bulb. And if you can contain that heat, it's enough to keep you warm. You also need a food source, something that you can eat and munch on, as in the case of the climbers. If all they had was a bag full of brown durum wheat that they could have chewed on, or capsules of honey. I talked with some people about this. encapsulate honey, and you can buy capsules where you can put stuff in them. Put a bunch of capsules and have honey in there. Honey would be one of the best things you could have to keep warm. You could live for a week on honey. It also would provide you with some liquid. At any rate, so bucket number one, I'm going to move on to bucket number two. What would you have in bucket number two? In fact, I'm going to go back to bucket number one for just a minute here because there's something so essential, so important that I believe you should have that it's ultimately important and it's small. It's something you should have with you. And I have not had time to really talk about this in past weeks, but I'm going to take some time tonight. And as you probably know, if you visited my homepage and gone to the health subpage, there are some items there that I've had listed for a long time. One of them is called Super Silver Solution. It is a solution of silver, oxygenated silver in water. It's a patented process that is, it takes silver. Now, this is not colloidal silver. Let me explain the difference. A colloidal silver takes an electrolysis process and takes basically atomic silver, or in some cases very finely ground up silver, puts it in solution, and then you mix that with water and drink it, ingest it. And it's been known for centuries, for thousands of years, in fact, that silver will, not transmit viruses. In other words, it will, that's why they used it in coins, in coinage, because it will actually take care of bacteria and viruses. Now, you have to be very careful when you're talking about this because you don't want to use the word cure. You don't want to imply that this is a medicine of some kind. And that's very important because in this country, of course, you have the FDA that watches those things extremely closely. And so that's why I tell people you have to understand and learn about this for yourselves. The Super Silver Solution is not colloidal silver. It's a very different process. And basically what happens, the end product, after it goes through the process, is you have atomic silver attached to multiple oxygen atoms. So when it goes into your system, it's already in a water solution. So you just take a teaspoon of it. You have to shake the bottle well before you use it. That's the only requirement. It can freeze. It'll last 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 years. It will not go bad on you. And it's simply oxygenated silver in a clear water base. The water is simply there so you can ingest the silver. But here's what happens when it goes into your system. Your red blood cells identify the oxygen, grab it, and move it into every cell of your body just as it does oxygen. And then the silver is left there, and the silver is extremely effective dealing with pathogens. And so at any rate, I want to read a patent that was just issued, and this is very exciting, and I've been waiting a couple weeks to actually make this announcement, but in November of 2006, this year, the patent office, the U.S. Patent Office, issued a patent, number 7135195, to the owners of Super Silver Solution. And I'm going to talk about that patent on this show. And once again, I have to be extremely careful in the way this is presented, and it'll be posted, the PDF of the patent will be posted on my webpage, and I encourage you to go read it, especially pages 19, I think it's about 19 to 30 of the patent. But anyway, I'm going to read from the patent, so there's no chance of me misquoting or misinterpreting or misstating what has been done here. I'm reading from the patent. This is page, 20 of the patent, and once again, this will be posted on my webpage, on the health subpage, and I encourage you to go read and learn about this because in a survival situation, the one thing I guarantee you I will have with me is Super Silver Solution. I will have some other things. I'll talk about those in a minute. Here they're talking about the patent. It says, the use of a composition of 32 parts per million silver according to this invention, the invention referring to Super Silver Solution, produced a reduction in bacteria on beefsteak. In the following, this reduction is expressed in logarithmic units, etc. But in the first result is dealing with salmonella. They talk about E. coli, spraying just a quick spray, and Super Silver Solution, when you get it, you get a spray bottle, you get an eyedropper bottle, and you get a small carrying bottle. It comes in 8-ounce bottles, and that's how it is sold. Typically, I recommend that people get 3 bottles for each person in their group. And this is what I would say would be a minimal survival package. 3 8-ounce bottles per person. And now, I've had food poisoning. I've had other issues that I've had when I start to feel a cold coming on or a virus, like the flu virus, and I did last week. I started feeling kind of, ooh, I'm not feeling good. A lot of people around me were not feeling good. I took a teaspoon of Super Silver Solution. I shook the bottle well first, took a teaspoon. 4 hours later, another teaspoon. And, whether it's food poisoning that I've had because of just eating in the wrong place, it takes care of it. And that's something I want you to experience for yourself. And only when you experience that for yourself, you'll go, you know, this stuff I want with me. Don't, as I say, don't leave home without it. When I travel, I always have a bottle of Super Silver Solution with me. Because you're on planes, you're in airports, you're in bus stations, you're in gas stations, you're going into convenience stores, you're drinking water out of from a different location, you're bound to get bacteria, you're eating on the road, the sources of food are not necessarily the cleanest, you're possibly in a foreign country. I always have Super Silver Solution with me. Okay, so the next, I'm going to read the list of bacteria, etc., and viruses that are included in the patent. Now, this is the U.S. Patent Office granting a patent for an invention, Super Silver Solution, that deals with these items. And I want you to sit and listen to this list as I read them. Salmonella, E. coli. Just a second, I got to grab the next page here. Abdominal pain and diarrhea, bronchitis, vaginal yeast, conjunctivitis, external cuts and infections, external otitis, otitis media. On to the next page. Fungal skin infection, gonorrhea, malaria, halitosis and gingivitis, pelvic inflammatory disease, pharyngitis, retrovirus infection, HIV, sinusitis and rhinitis, respiratory tract infection, urinary tract infections. That is a list included in the U.S. patent that will be posted on my webpage. And you may notice that HIV was included in that list. This is an amazing breakthrough in many ways. And by the way, this is also EPA approved. Now, this company and these people dealing with Super Silver Solution have gone through a tremendous amount of background work to get this to where it is today. And as I say, this is not colloidal silver. This is a very unique item, and there's only one place to get it. I'm lucky enough to have been in contact with the people who are the source of this, and I sell it on my webpage. I don't sell things on my webpage just because I can make a few bucks off of it. I put things there because you need them. I put them there because I use them. I use them regularly, so I have the water filter. And another thing, I'll be talking about another item that I'm adding, which is called oil of oregano. And I'm adding a very specific link to that with some great information, and I'll be talking about that in just a minute. So when I put the water, the Berkey water filter up there, it is because I use it myself, and it's where I go. If I go to a foreign country, my Berkey water filter goes with me. If I go to a foreign country or out where there's potential for a survival situation, my Berkey water filter goes with me, my Super Silver Solution goes with me, my Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet goes with me, so I have my charts so I can make a calendar and I can use the charts in that book. I know somebody that took my Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, took the staples out of it and made and plasticized the pages, and it's in his survival kit. He said it's one of the most important things in his survival kit. I would have, now there are certain things I do not sell because it's not, it just would be hard for me to deal with that. For example, the organic red wheat, also called Austin wheat. There's a site, I usually don't link the sites, but just to give you an idea where to get it, it's called austinwheatgrass.com. And there are other sources of organic red winter durum wheat. It's the hard wheat berries. And that you really need, you should be using these every day. And what's funny, what's almost comical, is if you lived as a survivalist, you would be far healthier, you would be far more, your mental stability would be better, and you would be better tuned to dealing with your everyday life just as a normal person, and say there were no calamities, were no emergencies. If you ate like this, if you lived like this, and you lived a mentally stable life, you would be far better acclimated to live in today's world. And that I find very, very interesting. So once again, you will find posted on my webpage the new information and the patent information regarding Super Silver Solution. I cannot tell you enough how important this is to be placed in your survival kit. So once again, I'm going to review bucket number one. Bucket number one, a Berkey water filter with the four filters, two of them that you would use, two extras. A 25 pound per person supply of red winter hard wheat berries, or red wheat berries. 25 pounds per person organic, which means you can grow them again. They're not hybrid, non-hybrids you want. And you can sprout those. You can grind them up and cook bread. You can grow them to seed and then replant the seed. That is important. I would have a small knife. I would have Super Silver Solution, three bottles per person in your group. I would also have oil of oregano, one of the other major viral essential oils that you would need in case of, say, bio warfare. These are essential. This would be in bucket number one. Okay, now I'm going to go on to bucket number two. Things like flashlights, battery-operated devices, cell phones are a plus and a minus. A cell phone you may need for communications, but remember, you can also be located by your cell phone. Do you want to be located? Do you want to be in a place where nobody knows where you are? You have to make that decision. Your cell phone is a source of a signal where people can locate you. Now, in a certain survival situations, you may not want a cell phone with you or with somebody in your group. So at any rate, there again, you have to be cohesive as a group to understand what's your objective, What are you trying to accomplish? And who is going to give you some problems? Okay, so bucket number two, I would have the additional things such as seeds, a small fold-up shovel, a larger knife, a folding-up handsaw, handsaw, like the kind that fold up. I would have rope. I would have aluminum foil. I would have a scissors. I would have an iron pot with a cover, if you could carry it, or if you, weight was a consideration, have an aluminum pot with a cover. I would have a small alcohol stove with no moving parts. Not the kind you get that you go camping with. There are some on the market. They're the old Swedish type camp little stoves where there are no moving parts. No pumps or things to break. They would last and you could use them for a very long time. And then, of course, a supply of alcohol. Alcohol is very fairly efficient. I would have a pressure cooker. A small, maybe 1 to 2 quart pressure cooker. I would have a grill that you could put on some rocks. When you build a fire, you have something to put your pan on, or some, a piece of meat, or a piece of bread to cook it, or whatever. I would have fire starters, probably butane, a butane supply, a couple backup bottles of butane. And I would tightly control those in any use, because that's one of your more important issues. I would have some fire starter material. Many times hemp rope is one of your best fire starters, and rope is something that you should have too. If you could carry it, I would say a ball or a spool of baling twine. Amazingly strong and versatile, and can be used for all kinds of applications, and there's a lot of it in a roll. It's a round cylinder roll of baling twine, just like the farmers use. I would definitely have that. This is in bucket number 2 and 3, or pack number 2 and 3. Then I would have a bit larger saw if I could get one with big teeth, the kind that you would use to cut limbs off of a tree. Shoes. Most people don't realize this, but in a survival situation, your shoes or boots are probably your most important item to get you around safely, to keep you warm, to keep your feet protected. It's extremely important. So a pair of extra shoes, one to keep you dry, extra socks. You will find any military commander, one of his most important things that is on his mind are the feet of his men. Change socks, dry boots, dry shoes, comfortable shoes, shoes that you can walk in, shoes that will be in all types of terrain and comfortable, shoes that will last, not shoes that are going to break down, shoes with good arches, shoes that fit your foot. One of the absolute most important things in your survival pack would be good shoes that are going to last. Now, eventually, all of those are going to wear out. So the idea is that if you are really on a long-term survival issue, then you're going to have to replace all of these items with naturally occurring products, whether they're leather or whatever. And all of your manufactured products are going to go by the wayside. So in the interim, when you're using your manufactured modern items, you have to be getting ready to live off the environment. And that's where a lot of people start to break down, is on the long term. Okay, a lot of people say have MREs, meals ready to eat, or they have canned goods. What do you do when that runs out? And I always get a kick out of these government guys who have a cave and they've got it stocked and they're all ready and they're going to go sit in their cave. But what are they going to do when all that runs out? You know, the person that's far better off is the person that right out of the chute goes out and tries to deal with it, tries to deal with reality, because when those guys come out of their little bunkers or caves or dome houses underground that they've built and stocked with all kinds of provisions, when those guys come out of there, they're going to be very poorly suited to survive in the long term. And this is true of the government people who have built these extensive cave systems, etc. They might survive okay in the short term, but in the long term, when they come out of those caves, first of all, nobody's going to be very happy with them. They're going to say, how come you guys look so good? Gee, you must have stored all this stuff up from all our resources, and people are not going to be real happy to see them around. And they're going to come crawling up and say, gee, would you teach me how to plant? Would you give me some of your stock of seeds, because I don't have anything and I don't know how to do anything, and my cook died and my maid died, and all the provisions in my cave have run out, and now I don't know what to do, so will you help me? Yeah, I can see George Bush walking up to somebody and saying that, or how about one of the Clintons or Dick Cheney? I don't think they're going to get too much help. So those people are only fooling themselves. They're going to survive initially, maybe, but that's it. So at any rate, what are your most important issues? Keeping warm, keeping dry, having clean water, food, and the ability to keep your brain in one spot, keep your head screwed on straight, and to maintain stability, emotional stability, in your group. Your group and its cohesiveness. And what I have noticed, too, from being just personally in survival situations, is that there are some people that you thought were really solid people, and they crack. And there's other people who you thought, boy, that guy's a wimp. He ain't going to make it one day. And he's one of the top survivors. People will fool you. People that you think are going to be excellent will not be. People who you think wouldn't make it 10 seconds are going to do very well. It's amazing how people change and adapt, and I want to talk about what I said in my Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet. The quote by Darwin, he said, it's not the most intelligent or the most physically fit that will survive. It's the species that is most adaptable to change. What a concept. What an amazing concept in a very short statement. Okay, on to the next topic. And here is a quick list of other topics that I want to cover tonight. And this kind of weaves into the topic of survival. Here, for example, the South Pole, the government facility down there, is releasing a weather balloon with a telescope to go up and attempt to measure the solar output and compare this reading with the reading they did 11 years ago at the last solar minimum. We are supposedly at a solar minimum. They're trying to determine if the sun, in fact, is pumping out tremendous amounts of energy over and above what it was doing on a regular basis 11 years ago. Now, this is a very difficult measurement, and I'm going to explain some variables here that are very difficult to control. Right now, even though we're in a solar minimum, the sun is flaring tremendously. There's two sides to this, because the flares, of course, are pumping out a lot more electrical energy, something they are not even measuring, something that affects our weather directly, our jet streams, the temperature, energy influx, the Joule heating on Earth, Joule heating being the electrical heating of Earth. This is something they're not even measuring. The other thing is the large sunspots actually look cooler. So that may give them false readings also. This is a very bad time to be attempting to make this measurement because of the high level of activity of the sun. The winter temperatures, as you know, are very high in the Midwest. In fact, today, December 21st, in Minnesota, it's raining and 40 degrees. We have not had winter at all. We've had last week, even a day that 50 degree temperatures, over 50 degrees. It's been like this all over the place. And in fact, when we have this kind of weather, typically Russia will be in the deep freeze, but that isn't happening anymore either. We truly have, and I don't call this global warming, I call this solar warming. The sun is out of sorts. And I have to ask a very important question, because people think, oh, well, when this starts, it's going to keep getting warmer and warmer and warmer and warmer, and they don't understand how the sun cycles. So could we be, in fact, in for an extremely cold cycle following this, not a hot cycle, and continuing hot cycle? In other words, the sun could be cycling up, producing a lot more energy now, and then all of a sudden dipping down and producing far less energy. Could this be also an indication of something coming into our solar system, interacting with the sun, that the government is not telling us about? Because, as I said, you would not look up typically as a person and see a big round Planet X type object coming in the solar system. It would be shrouded as it was way out beyond Pluto, for example, as it breaks into the electrical capacitor that surrounds our sun. It would be enshrouded in a large cloud of water and dust and nitrogen, oxygen and hydrogen, and it would not be visible even to a person with good equipment. And only then would it become visible as it would break through the into the region, say, out by Neptune or Saturn. And then all of a sudden, possibly astronomers, amateur astronomers, may get a glimpse of this for the first time. But up until that point, it would be very difficult for anybody to observe. So, and we've seen all of this stuff coming in from the south. We have all of this telescopic professional equipment at the South Pole. Obviously, something is going on down there. So, what is affecting the sun? By the way, all of the hype about 2012, I want to make this point very clear on this show, and what an appropriate show, as the 21st of December 2006. Now, there are all of these dire predictions that the Earth is going to end in 2012 because of some kind of alignment with the galactic center. Let me explain something, folks. We are in that exact same alignment tonight as I'm on this radio show. And as you can see, the world is not ending. We go through that same alignment every year as we have for the past 100, 200, 300, 500, 1,000 years. So there are some people out there, I call 2012, it's the next Y2K, because people will attach to a date and they keep hearing that, oh, 2012, the Earth is going to end. But you know what it is? It's a disinformation ploy to distract real information from the public. So whenever you hear the word 2012, end of the world, ultimate disaster, just remember that you are facing that same alignment tonight. Exact same alignment. It's not like we shift our alignment with the galaxy every year so that all of a sudden there's something magical about 2012. That is complete hogwash. In fact, as I said, tonight, December 21st, 2006, we are in the exact same alignment as it will be in 2007, 2008, 2009, as we were in 2005, 2004. So 2006, December 21st, we have the exact same galactic alignment, and the world is not ending. So take that one to the bank. If anything happens in 2012, it's not because of the Mayan calendar. There's another huge misnomer. The Mayan calendar does not predict the end of the world. The Mayan calendar works in cycles, and they always had ceremonies at the end of the cycles of their many calendars. Their disaster calendar was actually a very different calendar than the one that these people are referring to. So at any rate, I just am amazed that I'm not going to go into that. In fact, I do have a publication coming out fairly shortly dealing with this topic, and that should be hitting the streets fairly soon after my upcoming publication that will be coming out soon. The 100-page book is not about 2012, I guarantee you. It's going to be something very interesting that the public will be very interested in. I want to give my 800 number quickly. This is for the Berkey filter and the shortwave offer. This is for people who they want to use an 800 number. It's 800-983-5622. That's 983-5622, and there's a header information. Just call that number for the Berkey water filter offer, which includes a free radio, shortwave radio that you can listen to this show. That's also on my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's www.jmccsci.com. And the mail order address is JMCC P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota. That's MN55392. And what I suggest for people with mail order, you can order the Berkey water filter. You get the same free radio offer, $315. That price is set by the manufacturer. But I give you the free WRX 911 shortwave radio that you can listen to this show and many others around the planet, and free shipping. All of the things that I sell there are with free shipping. So at any rate, on to the next few topics. The sun has been absolutely out of sorts, flaring, pulsating. The auroras around Earth are pulsating on about a one-hour basis. The magnetic field, the plasma magnetic field of Earth, is flipping back and forth rapidly. We are in the equivalent stage right now of a solar maximum as far as solar conditions are concerned. We've had X-ray bursts. We've had cosmic ray bursts that have lasted for days, highly unusual conditions, and the sun continues to pound out tremendous amounts of information of energy, both electrical, which nobody in NASA is even measuring, but I can detect it. I can see it in the storm systems that surround Earth. This past week, we've had a tremendous amount of tropical storm activity around the planet. And, of course, NOAA has absolutely no reporting of any of this because they don't deal with that. They only deal with the little October, like June to October, hurricane season in the Atlantic, which they're very bad at doing anyway. If they tried to do worldwide weather, they would fall so flat on their faces, it would make your head spin. So as a way of only dealing with what affects the eastern coast of the United States and the Gulf area, what a cop-out on the part of NOAA, our tremendous National Weather Service. So at any rate, I am about out of time on the survival, ultimate survival show. Remember, you are on your own. What you have now will be all you will have in an ultimate survival situation. Once again, this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and join me next week for the final issue of Ultimate Survival. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.